my comments, I guess, regarding this are twofold. One, I think that the allowance of it to fluctuate and be free is really what we all live in America for. The Morris Plan banking system was developed in the United States in the early 1900s. That was the first consumer lending in the world. America today has the lowest consumer rates in the world, and I think we're going to continue to perpetuate it if we allow it to fluctuate freely with the marketplace. I have no other comments.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions by the committee?
Mr. Chairman, as I'm writing down notes on the question that you ask, it comes to mind that a number of institutions are paying interest fees. Perhaps someone could comment as to what the prevailing practice is today, because I'm not really aware of it. But my recollection is that is important being done now. Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know of any bank, mortgage company in the state personally that's paying it now, but we know that the states have enacted regulations requiring it, that it does cost us to service the mortgage. We collect the payments, we report to Alaska House, and we do much of their work for them. So in areas where they have they're paying interest, they're also charging a fee. But I'm not absolutely sure that they just about met out.
Yeah, that was what the evidence showed several years ago, and again, I'll try and get some more figures.
Are you suggesting a committee substitute?
Pardon? No. Yes.
John Ellis? Johnny Ellis?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Johnny Ellis, and I'm testifying today as an individual. Just a few brief comments. If this legislation had the effect of increasing competition in the credit market and lowering interest rates for consumers, I would favor it, but the facts suggest that it would not. I'd like to confirm my specific comments to one point, that of the deregulation of surcharges and transaction fees. The legislation before you, as I understand it, would deregulate the additional fees that lenders can charge on top of the deregulated interest rate. Legal setup charges, transaction fees and points, and other charges, even with the truth in lending provisions, add significantly to the real interest rate, making comparison shopping complicated and confusing to the consumer, especially to low-income people seeking credit. And that sort of shopping around is crucial to fuel the competition in the credit market. Studies suggest that the vast majority of consumers do not comparison shop for credit. From a consumer standpoint, this is a bad piece of legislation. I would urge you to reject it.
Thank you. Any questions by the committee? Thank you. Jean, you'll have to do that one for me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's Jean Cration, and I'm chair-elect for the Alaska Women's Political Caucus. The caucus appreciates this opportunity to testify before this committee, and we would like you to know that we oppose Senate Bill 485 and House Bill 246. Whereas we can appreciate the attempt being made philosophically, practically we believe it will negatively impact on women and low-income people. While there are many factors that must be considered while making needed adjustments that reflect the market conditions within Alaska, I want to draw the committee's attention to the issue of competition, noting that poor, less well-educated people in Alaska are locked into borrowing in competition-free neighborhoods. It is a known fact that competition does not exist in low-income markets. Retailers and other lenders do not compete over credit rates because frequently there is only one lender. Bank and finance companies do not have branches in poor neighborhoods. There are no department stores and rarely any used car lots. Grocery stores and clothing stores exist but rarely provide credit. Given the size and poverty of the population, the community generally can support only one furniture store. If another one opens up, both may go out of business because people do not have enough spending money to keep both profitable. With only one furniture store, that store can charge whatever it wants. Another area is that competition is also inadequate because buyers have insufficient information as to rates and availability. From a consumer perspective, competition in the credit market is not like competition in the supermarket, if you will. In both cases, an informed consumer is the key to a competitive market. But when pricing goods The cost to the consumer is usually clearly marked on the item and readily comparable. In buying credit, much more is at stake since consumers lose their homes and life savings. Moreover, the transition is infinitely more complicated. This complexity is particularly befuddled the low-income and unsophisticated borrower, and they will be the target of unscrupulous lenders. Further, creditors do not advertise rates, and many buyers lack the time or stamina to call several different lenders to obtain rate information. Consumers also have false impressions about which institutions will lend to them. Historically, many working-class people and minorities were denied credit by banks and so still stay away from banks. Others do not realize that they are eligible for some credit union memberships. Some probably think they do not make enough to qualify for credit cards. Many are probably unaware that savings and loans are now extending consumer credit. A survey by the Federal Reserve Board in 1977 noted that only 30% of potential borrowers shopped around. Most choose lenders based on proximity and familiarity. And familiarity is a big factor here in Alaska specifically. So in a small community where there is a limited number of banks and a particular credit card is being offered from a bank who is only taking applications, say, from existing depositors, or the applicant does not make enough money to qualify for credit from that card issuer, competition is meaningless. Where there is a lack of competition, such as I have mentioned here, there needs to be sufficient safeguards for women who make only 59 cents for every dollar that a man makes, as well as other low-income groups. The Alaska Women's Political Caucus affirmed the need to safeguard the interest of those more vulnerable to unscrupulous lenders. Consequently, we oppose House Bill 246 and Senate Bill 485, for it will not satisfy this need. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the committee? Thank you. We have one more witness in Anchorage, Jane Angley.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Assembly, and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify. I'm here in opposition to the bill before you. I'm speaking as an individual, although I do sit on the Anchorage Assembly, and in that capacity represent some of the poorer areas of Anchorage. The primary concern that I have with the bill before you is the obligation or the responsibility of the individual consumer to negotiate their credit terms with a potential creditor. As you're well aware, there are many different elements that go into the ability of an individual to be able to negotiate for anything, whether it's a job, whether it's a position in public or private life, as well as seeking financing before either a retail outlet or a banking institution. Some of the things that affect the ability of an individual to negotiate have to do with education and the ability to communicate and the ability to even dress in a manner that looks like you are a responsible person in terms of how our society functions. One of the things that this bill would suggest is that certain individuals who do not have perhaps all the educational background, do not have the ability to speak perhaps as clearly as members of the legislature, are going to be at a disadvantage when they are presented with the opportunity to negotiate for their interest rate on a given loan. Particularly the people who will be at that disadvantage are those who are probably poor and those who are probably female. That, with any amount of luck in our lifetime, may change. But for right now, the problem is that they are put at a disadvantage. As I understand the intent of the legislation, it was in fact to provide an opportunity for low-income persons to be able to have credit because they are currently unable to do so because of their financial standing in the community. While I applaud that effort, I do not believe that this particular bill achieves that particular goal. As other people who have spoken before me have indicated in other states where such deregulation has occurred, the actual occurrence that has evolved is that lower income people are paying as much as 50% for loans on used cars. In that situation, you have to balance would they ever have been able to get the car at all if the interest rate was not deregulated. But I guess I come down on the side that by the time they finish paying 50%, if they are able to do so, they've really paid quite a bit more for that car and quite a bit more for the interest that they borrowed to be able to acquire it. I encourage you to vote against it because I think that in the long run, those people who are in a disadvantaged situation in our society through accidents of birth and geography, I might mention that I spend most of my professional time working in rural Alaska. In villages, in most cases, there's one store, and that's all there is. Additionally, in villages, there's usually one period of time during the year when people have money, and it's usually around the harvesting times of fishing. So that during the winter, whatever interest rate, people have to borrow money because they don't have cash income during those months. That store would be in a particularly advantageous situation to be able to fluctuate its interest rates depending on whether or not they allow borrowing at all. So that in the state of Alaska, I think you've got not only regular old urban poor people, but I think you've got a situation whereby geography, you've got people who are going to be negatively affected when it's their responsibility to negotiate for their interest rates. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jane. Any questions with me? Thank you. Angie Grosser.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Nancy Grosek, and I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Women's Lobby. And we would like to speak out in strong opposition to any bill that would change the current ceiling for interest rates here in Alaska. I'd like to keep my remarks brief and would like to state that we are in agreement with the testimony presented by ACPIRG, Alaska Legal Services, the Women's Political Caucus, and the remarks just made by Ms. Anvik. One of the arguments used in support of this bill is that competition would keep interest rates down. It's our contention that there is very little competition which exists here in Alaska, especially in the rural areas. And I think one of the first indications of competition is free checking. Currently, there is no bank in Alaska that offers any type of free checking. Some offer deals if the minimum balance is $2,500 or more per month, but only the upper income people can afford to keep this monthly balance. I think the majority of us Alaskans live on a paycheck basis. I think one of the gentlemen also said that they are offering better rates of interest on deposits, but so has the monthly checking rate gone up here in Alaska to offset how much they pay on deposits. Again, the banking community and the Retailers Association have not demonstrated a need for this type of legislation. There is no evidence, and they have not presented any evidence, that there has been a consumer credit availability problem here in Alaska. I know when this bill passed the House, one of the justifications was that it would create jobs here in Alaska, and one of the authorities was a Wall Street Journal article that cited that Citicorp moved its credit card operation from a suburb of New York to South Dakota. And I guess due to recent changes in our banking law, Rainier Bank has opened a facility here in Anchorage. And they are looking to center their credit card operation outside the state of Washington. And I would like to point out at this time that Washington, in a 1982 initiative, just increased their ceiling for interest rates. I think it's absurd to base a justification for passing this law that a credit card company would move to Alaska and establish it as their base of operation. I think when you compare South Dakota and Alaska, the costs of living are entirely different. I think also we need to look at the long distance rates. I don't think any bank would like to pay the long distance rates that are here in Alaska, even if there's an 800 number. And what's to guarantee that these jobs would go to Alaskans? Okay, since November, I have received two direct mail letters from Citicorp in South Dakota soliciting my application for the Visa credit card. It specifically states, in order for me to be eligible, I must have an income of $25,000 or more. The interest is set at 19.8%, with 50 cents a month billing charge, plus another $40 just to get the credit card. I've also received solicitation from the American Express card company, which says I must have an income of $20,000 or more. And I've also received a credit card solicitation from Chicago, bank in Chicago, with interest set at 19.1%. I think that I would not go outside for these type because it's higher than here in Alaska, and I think the justification that they're in competition with these groups from South Dakota and whatnot are not true and they're not real, because why should I go outside and pay a higher rate of interest when I can get something here for 18%? I don't think that argument makes sense. OK, Okay, another situation, if you look at the bill, like House Bill 246, or any bill, which is Senator Joseph's bill that he just introduced, states that the interest or terms would be as agreed on by contract. The banks are talking about raising the interest rates. They're not talking about what a contract is, and they're not talking that the rich people, when they go into the bank and or to a credit card company or to a retailer and go in and negotiate an interest rate, that rich people would pay a lower interest rate because they have more money, more credit stability, and they have a higher income, whereas women, minorities, and children who make less money and are on the lower economic scale would be paying more interest. Just to use an example, Robert Atwood, because of his credit history and his length in Alaska and whatnot, could pay anywhere from 3 to 5%, whereas someone who just moved up here, who had a low-paying job as a clerk, would end up paying 33%. I think there's also potential that if we pass House Bill 246 or any bill like it, we're creating a Lawyers Employment Relief Act. In order to have a valid contract, you must have an offer, an acceptance, and then some exchange of consideration. But there also must be equality and bargaining power. And that means the lender and the consumer must be on equal footing in negotiating the contract. Otherwise, you have an adhesion contract, which would make the agreement null and void. Consumers could bring suits against the lender, showing that the interest rate was not freely negotiated. What would happen is the consumer would come in, they would sign a standard form, they have no real choice, it would be a take it or leave it situation. And this is, courts have dealt with this issue in other parts of the country and have denied any effect to a clause in an adhesion contract deemed by it to be unfair. And I think there's a real potential for this happening here in Alaska. Also, I don't really know what fiscal notes have been submitted with this bill, but I think this bill would have an effect on the court system. We would need more judges. I would suggest that you ask Mr. Snowden to prepare a fiscal note. Consumer protection would also need additional staff. Alaska Legal Services would also need an increase in their funding because of the numerous credit problems that would arise. I would also just suggest that you get a fiscal note from the Department of Education, because if we're going to have this agreement by contract, then I think it should be a mandatory graduation requirement that all students be taught how to negotiate a contract. So I think there's more to it than that meets the eyes. I'd also like to state that 1991 is just around the corner, and banks and lenders could make agreements with natives who hold shares of the stock from the Native Land Claims Settlement Act, and they could make the deal, we'll give you a low interest rate of 3 to 5%, and if you put up your shares of stock as collateral or security. I think if then, what happens if they default due to a bad fishing season or other calamities, then we'll find that the banks and the lenders in the state own the majority of the stock. I think another thing in this bill, it was amended in the House to put in a negative sunset. I think this is a total sham. As the banking gentleman said, every state that has enacted a negative sunset have ended up not putting it into effect. Because ours is for 2 years, what would happen is none of the banks, none of the lenders would change any of their current practices for the 2 years. And then when the legislature does the study, they'd find out there was no change, that basically things went along as usual. And then in 2 years, they wouldn't enact the other law. And when I spoke with the National Consumer Federation, they said this is basically a compromise situation that a lot of states have agreed to, but it is totally a sham because it's never worked or never proven to be effective. I have nothing further. If there's any questions, I'll be more than happy.
Thank you. That's a very interesting analysis. It is a Lawyer Employment Act. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, Lawyer Employment Relief Act. I'd be anxious to go into private practice.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you. Great.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't sign up at all.
Please come forward. We have one person on the network, I think, who's going to testify.
My name is Gary Wills, and I'm representing Home Savings and Loan here in Anchorage. I came as an observer today, but after listening to some of the testimony, I thought that I could make a few observations based on what I've seen here today. First of all, Home Savings is a small business that a lot of these people here are representing. We're the smallest financial institution in Anchorage, probably the smallest in Alaska. And as such, we've got some very definite concerns in the way we do business and the way we see business done in the marketplace. The savings and loan industry as a whole is a lot different than the banks, and I don't pretend to know anything about banking. We've relied in the past on a mix of business from construction loans and residential, single-family, one-to-four-family houses. Deregulation that's taken place the last couple of years has caused a significant change in the way I look at business and the way we're going to do business in the future. With the deregulation of the rates that we pay on deposits, our cost of money has been slowly increasing and will continue to increase. To compete in order to continue to make a rate of return on investment, which as a stock company we're required to report to the stockholders and earn a certain rate of return on investment, we have to look to other areas of earning income. And with deregulation, they brought several other areas that we can explore. Some of them include consumer lending, home improvement loans. We can get into small lines of credit for small businesses because we have a fairly small lending limit. We could get into to credit cards. The expansion of our industry, our particular business, into any other of these types of businesses is going to be made as an economic decision. Can we, in fact, compete profitably in these areas, and can we earn a certain rate of return on investment? And if we're approached with the limits on the interest rates, especially on the consumer side, then we're going to be faced with a situation where we cannot make our rate of return that we need to on these type of investments, and we're not going to make the investment. This will be particularly critical in the area of increasing interest rates. And I think, as I believe Ms. Cook discussed in her testimony, that now's not the time to look at this type of legislation, but we should look at it when the interest rates go up, and I'm in total disagreement with that. The reason being, we are facing huge federal deficits. Right now we're enjoying an artificially low interest rate because it's an election year. I expect that after the November election we're going to see a rapid increase in the rate of inflation, rapid increase in the interest rates and the prime lending rate. And then next spring, when we see the prime rate back at 18%, that will be the time that Ms. Cook suggests that we take a look at this type of situation, and you're going to be another year before you can get any action done. So from our standpoint, I think now's the time to take a look at it, now's the time to act, because with an increase in interest rates, we're not going to invest in consumer loans, and I agree there is going to be a tightening of that type of market and funds available. The other point that I'd like to comment on was the discussion I've heard relating to competition. I can't speak on the way banks compete, but I'm the smallest boy in town. Right now I have one branch. I'll have two branches here shortly. And I can't compete on convenience. You've got banks on almost every corner. You've got a lot of money machines in the various shopping centers. The way I compete is on service and price. And so when I develop a new product like consumer lending, first thing I'll do is make sure that the service that we have is the best service in town for consumers, and then I'll take a look at the price and I'll make sure I can make the rate of return I need on the product, and I'll beat most of the banks if I can. If I can't beat the banks and I can't compete on price, then I won't offer the service. The last point that I'd like to address was a lot of discussion has been made today on the record earnings of banks in 1982 and 1983. No one's really addressed why they've made a lot of money and what areas they've made a lot of money. And my observations of this industry in the last couple of years is they've made the money because we've seen the highest increase in construction, in residential construction, and a lot of commercial construction in Anchorage. Has nothing to do with consumer lending, has nothing to do with the other services that we're really talking about in this hearing today. The reason for this rapid increase has been the favorable rates that Alaska Housing has they've decided to offer to the public. And because of that, there has been a lot of benefit to the economy as a whole on the building side. And granted, the banks have made a lot of money. I would ask that you take a look at the normal cycles in Alaska and the lower 48 as well, and you'll see a normal 4 to 5 year swing from high profits to down where they're making zero. Our little institution 3 years ago made $5,280. And this year we're going to make probably $500,000 after tax. So granted, we're making a fair amount of money in the current boom, but we're expecting a 30% decline in business this year as far as our main source of business, which is residential lending, We expect a further decline in the following years, and we're going to have to look to other sources of business. Thank you for your consideration.
Mm-hmm. By the committee, Senator Fisher. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Garrett, you are in the consumer lending business now, are you not?
We are not. We're authorized to do consumer lending. We're looking at consumer lending, but a lot for us depends on what happens with these type of hearings. If we see the interest rates coming up, which I anticipate, like I said, a rapid increase in interest rates first next year, it will make no sense at all for me to get into the consumer lending area.
A follow-up question then. Your concern is that if the prime rate goes up and we stay at 18%, there simply wouldn't be any margin there for the lender.
From our standpoint, that's correct. Because our cost of funds, the way we make money is we have deposits that we bring in from various people in the countryside. We then have to price our services in order to not only pay that interest back to those depositors, but to realize a rate of return to cover our overhead plus our return on equity. And if that's not there with the new service, then we're not going to enter that area.
Well, since apparently at this point the prime is low enough so that the margin would be there, and the concern is for the future, might we not be in a better position to serve the public and the financial institutions as well if we tied the ceiling to the prime or to some to the federal rate, and then if the federal rate or the prime go up, there would still be enough margin to provide the difference necessary to serve the consumer and lending market.
Well, I'm certainly in agreement with variable rate loans, which is what you're talking about, and if we get into the consumer market, it will be more than likely a variable rate program. Again, it depends on competition. The problem you're going to have with setting a specific spread is you've got a wide range of cost of service for one institution to another. It'll be very difficult from your standpoint to dictate that a specific spread will make it profitable for me or for Alaska State Bank. It may be for me, but Alaska State Bank or National Bank of Alaska cannot make their rate of return on the service. So that would be a difficult area to set.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, just a brief comment on that point. The present statute is set according to the Federal Reserve, and that rate does not reflect the true cost of money. And what you propose is an interesting objective, and it seems to be very difficult to do, Senator Fisher, but the problem with our law now just does not rise as the cost, the real cost of money rises, unfortunately.
Seems to me if you're up against the limits, then there's other methods that closing charges, those types of things which would apply to the loan, which would actually, in effect, increase the overall payment of the consumer.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I understand the question.
What I'm saying is that are there other methods, hidden methods, which when you reach the limit, as required by law, then there are additional charges could be added for service charges or whatever. These types of methods, do the banks use those or in order to
so
be able to make that loan?
So you're saying to have some other sort of charge is going to make the yield overall
over 18%.
I cannot address that because, like I said, we're not into that type of lending yet. But with our experience with the truth in lending laws, at least on the other side, those are all disclosed, and we're still competing in the marketplace with a specific interest rate. And we have to compete with the banks. If we get up to a certain level, we're not going to be able to make it up by adding additional fees if they're not.
I guess what bothers me a little is that when money was tight, interest rates were high, and we had 18% on, and then there's been a relaxation of the rates, that increase that came down, and we're still hooked at that 18%. There was no reflection on that in the consumer credit or in the credit cards.
Yeah, and I can address that because we're not in that marketplace
so
yet.
So it's really hard to make that type of a judgment. And your reference to profits, I believe it was the bank who mentioned the regulation of profits. That's where that discussion took place. Didn't come from the committee or from the testimony there. I believe we have one site open yet with person who would like to testify, and Homer?
Yes, he's approaching the microphone.
City Council. I'd like to speak in favor of House Bill 246, and as we all really know, there's no legislation can be a perfect document, but this seems to be a good place to start. And deregulation has been proven in the successful in the transportation and telecommunications industry. I could go on and add a lot of things to it, but I think I'd just like at this point to speak in favor.
Okay. Is there anybody else here?
Thank you. Bill, stand by one moment.
No, I didn't want to ask.
Are there any questions on the part of the committee?
No.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, sir.
Would you pull the sites to see if there are any other people who would like to testify?
Is there anybody else here? Is anybody else here?
Please testify.
5 hours with a 10-minute.
We will conclude this meeting.
You're an inspiration to the Senate.
These are all my
people like to say.